Hey, fellow yous. This is Kathy.
This is Audrey.
And I'm Nicole.
Today we're doing Sloppy First by Megan McCafferty, and it's essentially a book about a hyper-observant 16-year-old named Jessica Darling who is wonderfully jaded and going through life after her best friend just moved away from where she lives in New Jersey, and it's just fantastic in my opinion.
You loved this book, right?
Yeah, I love this book. Yeah, when we get to it, I'm the one who recommended it, so we'll see. But yeah, if Nicole has volunteered to go over the cast of characters.
Yes. So first character is the main character, Jess Darling, who I didn't realize her name was Darling till partway through, and I thought everyone was just being really, really condescending until she mentioned that she's not nearly as like sweet and cutesy as her last name makes her sound. Mm-hmm. And she definitely isn't. She's, oh God, I hate the word spunky and I won't use it. She's a gutsy lady character. She's pretty cool. She has like her stream of consciousness is really fun to listen to. Mm-hmm. And then she has this best friend Hope who I have yet to see except that she talks about to her in letters.
Hope is so interesting to me because this is an entire series and I don't think you ever see her or like in the thing. She's always far away. She's always there and present.
The idea of Hope seems to exist. So Hope's both a character and kind of just like a concept in the book.
Yeah.
So, but Hope, we'll say, is like maybe one of the second most important characters just because she's like such a huge motivating part of Jess's life. Mm-hmm. And then Jess has like three shit best friends that she hates.
Yeah.
I can't quite figure out how she became friends with them, but there's Sarah, Manda. Lend a hand, Amanda.
Oh, and, God.
And Bridget. Bridget?
Yep, Bridget.
Bridget, yeah. Who moved to Hollywood to be famous, right?
I promptly forgot all of their names. So
They're not that important. They've got a cutesy name. What's their cutesy name?
The Clueless Crew.
The Clueless Crew. That's all you need to know about them because they're not that terribly important.
But
then there's
they are at the same time. Sorry, I'm going to be doing this whole time because it's just these are the friends that you have in elementary school, and then you grow up and you meet your Hope. You're like best friend, and then your Hope, and then you kind of realize like, oh my God, why was I hanging out with these people? And it's just they're not. Like, you've outgrown them, and that's what she's doing in this book. And it's just, it's pretty interesting to watch how it all plays out.
But her friend just moved away, so she has to hang out with these people, or, like, she's struggling with this idea of being alone versus hanging out with all these people that she hates. And then there's this cast of, like, am I missing anyone besides her terrible parents? Her terrible parents and her sister.
Yeah.
So just basic family stuff. And then the ridiculous cast of boys that come in and out of her life.
The boys.
And just the ups and downs of boys. So there's a whole cast in itself is just the boys that she talks to and talks about.
Mm-hmm. There's, I don't even remember.
Scotty,
who's like
the original, like,
all
guy
around,
friend.
Yeah, like all around American next door neighbor boy
that everyone wants her to date. And she's just kind of like, she has this memory of him trying to French kiss her in middle school. And she's like, what the fuck is your tongue doing? And I'm just like, that's what I love. Megan McCafferty really nails just like the sense of youth in many regards. But yeah, there's Scotty.
The recap of that story where she was like, I was getting on the bus and he decided that that was like a good time to just shove his tongue into my mouth. And it was like, no warning, just bam, French kiss. And she says the bus driver closed the door on his face before he could like finish doing it. That's the most awkward French kiss I could ever think of.
I was like, props to the bus driver who was like, we need to like,
nope, not happening. We need to,
but you're standing far enough apart that the doors can shut between you. It's a bad kiss.
Yeah, it's not a good kiss.
Oh, yeah.
That's definitely a middle school kiss.
Yeah, so there's, I think, I'm just going to, since the boys, and there's so many boys, the quick, easy ones are, I mean, I'm just going to include Len Levy, because if you read the second book, he actually becomes hot in the second book, and it's really interesting.
His purple acne clears up.
He went on Accutane.
Oh, Len Levy.
And not black market Accutane, like certain people, you know. So he becomes important in later books, but this one he's just kind of like a passing,
who had
horrible,
like a sad talent show experience. Is he the one that did like sad rap, and then he crowd surfed 10 minutes in and just landed on his feet?
Yep,
no one picked him up.
That's him.
Len Levy having a rough childhood.
Len Levy. And then there is Pepe Le Pew, who is the small kid that we all knew, who like randomly grows between his freshman and sophomore year and is just like becomes hot.
Does he?
Yeah, they mentioned it.
Oh,
yeah. And Nicole didn't finish the book.
Yeah, Nicole didn't finish the book. We'll just come right out and say it right now.
But yeah, and he's kind of like he has a crush on Jess early in the book, and it's just them speaking in French to each other because they're in French class, and it's pretty interesting because you get this other perspective of him as a performer and how he's performing through school. And then finally, there's the ultimate Marcus Flutie, and he, oh my God, like I'm going to get into him more later, but I will say like he has become this thing. Megan McCafferty on her Twitter bio, the end of it says, "I invented Marcus Flutie," because that is the impression he has made on so many lives. And he's just kind of like a former dreg, like was a washed up druggie, got into some issues. And then like the kind of he went to like this military school rehab place thing, and they kind of realized that they kind of realized that he's like a genius, and they're like, oh, well, let's put him in honors classes and drug test him all the time and see if it worked out. And it does. He's like, I'll just go straight edge to see what it's like.
Is that what happens?
Yes.
That's kind of a bummer almost.
How far did you get in the book?
I know I got to the part more than halfway. I
got
to the part where he's gotten back to the school and he hasn't quite spoken to her yet.
Oh, okay. So maybe they haven't explained it?
Yeah, I don't think they haven't explained it yet.
I mean, I know they explained that he was a genius. I just didn't know that he went straight edge. Last I heard, who was it? The friend. Oh, God. I mixed them all up. One of the Clueless crew was talking about how he would never, ever go straight edge.
Probably the gossipy one.
And he would just be on drugs always. The gossipy one?
Well, the one that's like her job is to gossip.
That's Sarah.
Sarah, yeah.
The bruiser.
Yeah. I picture her as Snooki, to be honest, because that's the thing. That's the funniest thing about this is, and I should really, like, we're jumping ahead here, but I'm just going to say the funniest thing is this takes place pre-Jersey Shore, but it takes place on the Jersey Shore.
I didn't realize it was in Jersey for a minute. I also, I'll be honest, my reading comprehension, not so great. There are just some things I did not absorb.
But yeah, so let's quickly run through why each of us think you should read this book.
I guess if you are looking for a book that captures what it's like to be in high school really well, this is a good book to read.
So I liked this book because it reads a lot like Stream of Consciousness, which made it really easy to get into. I wouldn't have usually picked it up because I was definitely, Audrey and I were talking about this, I was definitely the kid in school who was like, why would I want to read about more high school? I want to read about people who become dragon tamers or like wizards or ninjas or whatever.
Yeah, but magic.
Not high school. But actually, I kind of wish I'd read something like this in high school because it reads so much. I mean, she and I have minimal things in common except that we're both stressed, crazy people. But I loved reading as her because it just kind of made it feel like I was thinking these are things that I would have thought when I was in high school. It felt a lot like that. Like I would have known that there are people as weird as me in high school if I'd read this book.
Yeah, she captures the like people who like were uncool in high school but then go on to college and like figure themselves out like really well. So if you're one of those people that like wasn't popular and or like super popular in high school, I feel like...
Oh, I'm shaking right now because in later books, it's pointed out she is popular. She is a popular kid. She doesn't think she's popular, but she's popular.
She's popular.
But like, she doesn't admit that. So like, she is one of those people. But like, to everyone else, she's the popular girl.
Yeah, that's fair. She views herself as an outsider. So she captures that like process you go through really well where you're like, everything is. Well, and she just captures being a high schooler really well, too, where like everything is terrible. Everything.
Yep. Okay, and I'm going to say...
On that hopeful note.
Okay, this entire podcast, I'm just going to let you guys all know that this is going to be me. Like, that feeling you get when you show someone a really funny YouTube video and you're waiting for them to laugh, that's like me with Nicole and Audrey right now. I'm like, you will love this book.
Because I already love it just because of how much you love it.
I was approached when I was either 15 or 16, and my friend literally forced the book into my hand and was like, you need to read this book. I have been texting one of my friends, and I'm not sure if it was the one who originally gave me this book, but she's definitely up there, about this book as we're going through all this, and she's like, I really need to reread these books. Like, it's like, this is just, it had such an impact on us that, like, the nostalgia I got when I was rereading this book was insane. Last night, I realized, like, at 10:45, I was like, oh, man, I didn't reread the book because I was trying to finish that other book to give to Audrey. This is really bad. I stayed up until 2 a.m. And then, this is the best part, and then I was just, like, thinking until 3:30 a.m.
Just about
everything. Because, like, and then, like, part of the reason why I, like, clung to her so much when I was in high school is I was a cross-country runner. I was an honor student. I wasn't to the same level as, like, I wasn't a great cross-country runner. I wasn't the smartest kid in school. But, like, I felt these things. I also had a really bad depression. So I also felt like, yes, the world is terrible. Feed this. But, like, it's just, I think everyone should read this because she has the same, like, kind of, it captures teenagehood just like Catcher in the Rye did. And I, like, regardless of the age, if you're not a teenager, you'll feel nostalgia, but like good nostalgia, not like why am I going through this again nostalgia. And if you are a teenager, you will equate, even though it's a little dated, I will say, because it takes place in the year 2000, it's not We need to move on. I can't.
I just love the 2000s-ness of it.
Yeah. When they're like her fancy jean dress that she buys and you're oh my God.
I go to Delia's and I buy a full-length zip corduroy dress.
Where is it? Oh my God. I wrote down like 10 phrases that I found ridiculous in this book. I might have to have a minute to find them, but I do see that I wrote down somewhere on the page 7 they use the phrase jack to the max.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Like hyphens all in between. You're supposed to say it all at once. Jack to the max.
Okay. So, yeah, I guess is that the first thing we want to talk about? The datedness of it?
We can talk about the datedness. That's really the only point that I really loved to bring up. Although, like I said, it reads exactly like Stream of Consciousness. So there are definitely parts where I'm like reading it. That's almost why it was so jarring, because I was like, yeah, this is just normal words. And then what the hell is that? What was a good example? I mean, email with a capital E was definitely one that threw me.
And then snail mail, which was like very much a thing in like the early 2000s, but everyone stopped calling it that like almost instantly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then another thing that like kind of jumped out to me in like retrospect now is she's mentioning how like she's been limited to one long distance phone call a week.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, long distance was a thing.
Yeah, that used to be like a big deal. And like landlines versus cell phones.
Oh, yeah. Like, only parents have cell phones in this. Mm-hmm. Kids don't have cell phones yet. Yeah. Although they did mention one of her friends, the rich one, has like a pager or something.
Sarah? Yeah. Oh, God. No, Hi has a pager too. And there was a phrase that she used, beep from a peeps.
Yep.
I just can't. I loved all the like catchy, jazzy phrases, although they do go on to talk about. We forgot to mention Hi as one of the characters.
How would you describe her?
I would describe her as like secret mystery character. She was like the weird, she was like playing the role of like weird new transfer student from the city, from a different city, and everyone thought she was super cool, and they described her super cool outfit, which I can't remember what was on top.
The one, okay, describe what was on bottom.
A jean skirt, was it a denim skirt that goes all the way
to her ankles.
Yep. And then and then huge long like lace up boots, was that
it? Yep.
Yep.
And she has a giant slit up the denim skirt. Yes. So you know it's a
sexy denim skirt, not the kind that Mormons wear.
I was just like, oh my God. That brought back some wonderful memories.
So Hi. Super cool.
Yep. Super cool.
Clearly.
She's dating a DJ named Fly. So you know
God, that's right.
But yes. And then I guess terrible spoilers, but who cares? Which was a weird plot twist to me, but maybe Jersey City's the kind of place where this happens. They found out that she's like secretly kind of famous.
Yeah, she was like an heiress or something and super rich.
Yeah, she's a trust fund kid.
Yeah.
Playing the role of like a normal kid so she could write a book about it, so she could get into Harvard on like something other than her rich, rich name.
Yeah, basically so she could see, like, what the working class was like. And then it was a big deal at Jess's school because she basically, like,
wrote about them.
But also, like, dragged them all and was like, they're all backstabbing and terrible.
Yeah, but to be fair.
I don't know what they wrote. In this book, you don't know what they write.
The next book, oh, my God, it's great. No. So it comes out with what she's written, and she's, like, done, like, the saddest job trying to cover up, like, what their actual names are. Like, I can't remember exactly, but, like, Bridget,
Tara.
Bridget Malkovich is like, instead she's like Betsy Milanovich or something. Like, it's just like the saddest like cover up a bit, and like everyone was really upset because like, and Jessica is like, I refuse to read this. And then when she finally like, when someone tells her to do it, she finds out that her character's like the only legit cool one who doesn't realize how cool she is. And I'm just kind of like, okay.
I saw that coming because like there's this whole thing in the book where like Hi is trying to get a hold of her and like wants to apologize to her. And she like kind of apologizes ahead of it. So I was like reading it. I was like, Hi was nice to Jess. Because also I kind of can see like down the road that I feel like a lot of things go Jess's way down the road.
Ish. I'm going to say right now, just for all the listeners out here, this is like a 5 or 6 book series. Mm-hmm. They also create, she also after this came up with like a middle school series of them, which retcons everything. In this book, there's a line where Marcus is just like, where Jessica mentions, oh, this is the first time Marcus has ever acknowledged me. But then like middle school, they're just hanging out and talking all over the place. So that series does not exist to me. It's not my thing.
Series is dead to Kathy.
Mostly out of this series, I just reread the first and second book because it's like, the high school one, and then when she goes off to college, it kind of like loses a little bit of the flavor for me, especially since it wasn't as big of an impact on my life. But yeah, just
fair.
Yeah. Oh, and also I think that Hi was apologizing so much because technically she stole part of her title of her giant book from Jess.
Did she? Okay. Yeah.
Bubblegum Bimbos, was that it?
Yeah. Bubblegum Bimbos and Assembly Line Meatballers, which is a great title.
That is.
Yeah. So there was just a line at the end when they found that out that Jess was like, I knew her slang was always weird, so that's why beeps from my peeps. I was like, that might have just been bullshit. That might not have even been 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's a little dated, but I still think it's good.
The book is totally good. The datedness kind of just makes it better. I just loved kind of how dated it was. Yeah, I thought it was adorable.
Well, especially given our age, like that's very in line with like our own experiences as teenagers. So it does have like that extra like it's very resonates very well with us.
Yeah. But okay, so I guess the next one we have listed on the thing here is types of books. And are you going off of the cover?
Because
I know when I recommended this book, you really hated the cover.
I was like, oh God.
Not a fan of the cover.
So part of it is we already touched on it a little bit. So a lot of stuff happens in this book. So it was hard for me to like pick out like, oh, stuff to talk about because it's like a lot of teenage drama. So one of the things I was thinking about a lot when I was reading this was like, the fact that, like, I didn't read these books like this when I was in high school a lot. I was like Nicole. I read, like, fantasy, stuff like that. Because when I was in high school, I was like, this is terrible. I want to get as far away as possible. So, like, I'm going to go somewhere where there's, like, dragons and swords and, like, fighting and, like, nothing to do with.
And teen angst centered around dragons and fighting.
Yeah, that's fine because it has nothing to do with like
not handle
classes and like all that nonsense you have to go through. So,
see, I also like books like that, but I have to intersperse it because like I get depressed if I watch too much Buffy the Vampire Slayer because I know I will never have that sort of impact on the world of just saving it with the force of my punches.
You never be That's able fair. To do a backflip and then another backflip and then stab a stake through a guy at 50 yards and so you've never accomplished anything.
Exactly.
That's what Buffy the Vampire Slayer has taught me.
I have to intersperse them.
That's fair. I mean, I guess the thing I did was read, like, classics. I just, like, high school was a thing I wanted to get away from, so I didn't read any books about high school. So, like, the cover of this book is, like, very...
Should we describe the cover
of
the book?
Yeah, it's got, like, the thing I think that, like, just, like, hurt me the most was the little, like, folded up picture of a folded up note that has, like, a novel written on it. Where
like
I was just,
badly
like,
photoshopped in?
Because, like, well, also just because, like, writing notes is such a thing, and I was always, like... I'm also, like, I was not, like, by any stretch of the imagination, a popular kid. So, like,
really?
Surprise.
We are shocked and alarmed. Get out.
Which was compounded when I moved from, like, when I moved when I was in middle school from a very tiny school to a very large school. So, like, it's just
I was
hard
a nobody, too.
Me.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Nobody's.
Nobody solidarity.
So... It's hard for me to, like, go back to, like, the high school mindset. But I will admit that, like, this is a really well-written book that it does. She does, like, a really good job of, like, capturing what it's like to be a teenager. So then when you go back and read it, you're like, oh, I wasn't the only one having these thoughts. Although this teenager is, like, weirdly well-spoken, which, like, that was the only thing that threw me off sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, she's the smartest. She's, like, a genius. You kind of have to go with it.
I guess. Yeah.
Which, I guess, building off of that, what kind of adult do you have to be able to so perfectly write a book like this? Because is she a mad genius? Is she someone that's never, like, grown past this? Because, like, while I was doing, when I recommended this, I was doing research. Another author, I'm going to say, quote, unquote, completely, like, ripped off her book and stole it. And eventually, that book never saw the light of day at the end of the day. But it was just, like...
Actually, I think, weirdly, when that happened, I remembered reading about that, like... scandal or whatever. I mean, like,
maybe she just has like her old diaries from when she was a teenager and she like remembers how she used to talk and maybe her stream of consciousness has not changed that much. Because again, I still feel like I kind of think like this. I don't have as many like euphemisms for normal words.
Yeah.
I don't switch out my words with as many things, but I feel like I was reading this and thinking like my brain almost still runs kind of like this.
Yeah.
But the words are different.
Yeah, that's true. I think maybe that's partially, too, why it's hard to, like, pick out individual things to, like, talk about because everything does kind of, like, seamlessly. It's very, like, how you think. So it's hard to be like, oh, this one thing happened.
This is embarrassing to admit, but this book had me all turned around because I didn't realize that it was a diary at first. So I felt like it was even more like piecemeal because I was like, oh, it's like one of those books that's in shorts and you just find out like different things that happen in her life. And then I went, this seems chronological. What? Oh, wait a minute. That's why they keep listing the month at the beginning of every chapter. I swear I figured it out at like the end of February, but it took me a second to figure it out. But it does kind of jump all over the place.
It does.
But I liked that. It was kind of like short teenage attention span, and it also stuck to the important things. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, just some of them were such great, like, lead-ins. Everything seemed like a story in its own.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure. There's a lot of stuff that happens in the book. Like, a lot of stuff happens.
Yeah, her life's more interesting than my high school life ever was.
Yeah. Holy crap, yes.
Maybe just because she did things besides read books, but, like, her life, like, she... like just athletic like, things.
Yeah, I was like,
who is that are just talking to her?
That is a problem I had when I was reading it, where I was like, who is this girl? Because she's smart in sports and she gets invited to parties. Like, what?
But she doesn't get invited to parties, and that's the thing.
She must live in the shittiest town, though.
At the end of the book, she asks to go to a party with her friend. Well, not at the end, middle of the book. And they're just like, you want to go to a party?
Yeah, but they're not, like, opposed to her going. They just, like, assume she doesn't ever want to go. That's why they don't invite her.
True, true.
Because she's at all of the, like, meets or whatever, running or whatever.
Yes, the running meets.
Yeah, that was my life. So, like, I can't even get it out. Which leads me to my point, oh, my God, about how this is so, so similar to my life. It's Paul Parlapiano, who is the man that she is in love with throughout the book. Oh, he's just like perfect, a runner, a senior to her sophomore. Just like she has these constant, extremely intricate sex fantasies about him, mm-hmm. which I think we can all relate to from our teenage years.
They occasionally merge into like Marcus sex fantasies. She can't quite keep them separate.
That's because Marcus is just like life. So like it's going through all of this, and like there's this great revelation towards the end of the book that like in his first like semester of college he comes back and he's just like, guess what, parents, I'm gay. And I didn't know it at the time, but looking back, oh my God,
Scotty was gonna be gay. I was so sure. Oh, Scotty was gonna be gay.
Oh, okay. Is that the next door neighbor boy?
Yeah, the next door
He's just awkward. He's just generic.
He's just
gay.
But Paul Parlapiano is gay. That makes me.
Oh my God. Yeah, he's gay. And like the thing, like looking back at this with hindsight bias. Oh my, the guy I was in love with all through high school is now dating a very nice man. So you know, obviously, wasn't gonna pan out for me. Shout out Jack if you're listening. You're great. Benny's great. It's all great.
Also had a crush on a gay guy in high school.
Yeah, is that just like a thing? I think it might be. I don't know.
They've got the most charisma. They were always the most fun.
But yeah, so it's just like just seeing that and all that. But like there's this big thing where she finally does go to the party and she finally is like, I'm gonna talk to Paul Parlapiano. And this is before she knows he's gay and everything. And she declares his love to him, extremely drunk, and she throws up on his shoes. But one of the things that stuck with me is he says, like, you don't know me, like you wouldn't feel this way if you actually knew me. And that's like later we find out it's because he's gay, like he knows all this stuff. But like I thought that's extremely telling for the whole tunnel vision of youth in general, because Jess is so wrapped up in her life and her preconceived notions about what everyone is like, because she's right so often about just anything, tests, all that stuff. Like, she's so smart that she just assumes, like, I'm right about people. And that's also what leads to one of the biggest turnarounds in the book with her friend Bridget, which I don't think you reached, Nicole.
I don't think she's reached it yet.
That's okay. Yeah. Spoil away.
Do you want to explain what happens?
Sure. So Bridget has this boyfriend that she's been dating for, it's one of those relationships that starts in like middle school and continues on forever. And Bridget over the summer decides she's going to go to, like, where did she go? California, LA, somewhere warm and far away. I guess Jersey's warm too. I don't know. Anyways, I have no idea. Anyways, to start her acting career, and that goes super well for her. That was sarcasm.
It doesn't.
It goes nowhere. But while she's gone, or right before she leaves, she asks Jess to, like, keep an eye on Burke, just in case. And while she's gone, Jess discovers that Burke has been banging, what's her friend's name?
Amanda.
What,
just
is that
just Amanda. It's just Amanda.
Is that the hand Amanda lady?
Yeah. Which there is that's one of the downsides, is there is some slut shaming in this book a little bit, which I don't like. But at the same time, like, going after your friend's boyfriend, not the coolest thing. But there is another point where I guess it kind of slightly cancels out the slut shaming, where Jess is just like, I got to give her props. She can land any guy she wants within a week. So, like,
yeah, it wasn't even totally slut shaming. It was more just like the delusion that she had, the fact that she was completely pure.
Yeah.
It was more like, if you just accept that you're a person who's having sex and likes having sex. But she was like, no, no, it's fine. I haven't had actual sex, but I've done everything else.
Yeah.
So it's fine. I'm still fine.
And there is a little don't go after your friend's guy. But yeah.
That was also bad.
Bridget gets back and she doesn't immediately ask Jess about it, but Jess finally, I don't remember what triggers it, but she tells everyone that, or she tells Bridget at least, that Burke has cheated on her with Amanda.
Which leads to the cheerleader cat fight.
Yes.
Of the year 2000 in the lunchroom, which is great. I love that scene.
Yeah. All four of them.
The three of them. Jess was slightly removed and on crutches. So she
escaped. Just go at it in the cafeteria.
Physically fight?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Physically fight. Sarah knew the entire time because she's the gossip queen.
Right.
So she also didn't tell Bridget.
Right.
And then obviously Amanda.
Sarah's the one who told Jess, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. She told Jess.
Yep. Right.
This is so high school. She told this and then that. But it's just great.
The beauty of it.
That's what this book is like.
This glorious high school moment brought to you by Sloppy First.
Yeah.
By Sloppy First.
Eventually, though, Jess has this reconnecting moment with Bridget, I guess, where Bridget calls her up basically, or comes to her house and apologizes for getting mad at her. And she admits that she didn't ask Jess what she found out over the summer, and admits that it's because she was afraid to find the answer because she thought that Burke would probably cheat on her because the relationship hadn't been that great.
Mm-hmm.
In past months, because they're in high school.
Yeah. And during this conversation, you get this Jess finally is forced to by Bridget to look back at the past and realize she thought the three of the clueless crew were just all hanging out and pals together. But really, Bridget had been kind of pushed to the wayside the whole time and wasn't as tight with them as they all were. And she kind of has this realization of just oh, shit, I'm not infallible. I don't catch everything. And then Bridget even one-ups her at one point and goes, I just feel like we should probably start hanging out again because we both were previously only hanging out with one person and that one person in our lives is now gone.
Yeah.
And Jess is just like, what?
Well, and I think that's a important thing that most people learn when they're a teenager is you have these assumptions about people based on the observations you make, and oftentimes they end up being false, because that happens with Paul, whatever the hell his last name is, Paula Peple, where she thinks he's this beautiful, unattainable guy, and then he turns out to be gay, and she doesn't know him.
It happens with Pepe Le Pew all the time.
First
there's Black Elvis, and she's where he does this great performance at the talent show of being a Black Elvis because he's Black, and she's just when she finally realizes, oh my God, I know that kid. That's the weird derpy kid who sits in front of me in French class.
And has a weird crush on me.
Yeah. And then it happens again when she's working at the boardwalk over the summer. There's this guy who plays the geek, which is the character that you try to hit with a paintball gun or something. I'm not sure. But he just made such a great performance out of it that she's this guy is the best. And then she finds out after the school year starts that it's the same guy again. And it just keeps blowing her mind because she can't face the facts and the truth about so many things.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that's a pretty common thing for high schoolers, to be honest.
I know it was for me.
Yeah, I definitely, definitely did that, which is why I'm making this assumption. So,
yeah.
Have I learned my lesson? Maybe not.
We'll see. We'll see. But yeah. Do you have anything else you want to discuss, Nicole?
I just had a couple of favorite parts.
Okay, let's go to one of your favorite parts.
I remember that 58 was one of my favorite parts. Where was it? So it's just because it read so weird. Yeah. I liked how I was talking about how each thing kind of starts off like its own story. This was one of my favorites. It was the 17th of who fucking knows what month. I don't know. Some month. And it just says, things are getting really weird. Greg Mahoney was shot at a kegger last night. And that was just great. She goes on to explain that Greg Mahoney shot himself at a kegger, that apparently he got super drunk and found some loose bullets. And then, oh God, this is the best part. Shot himself up his own ass. Which is the best story I've ever heard. And I don't know why, but just her stream of consciousness relaying it is just the greatest. Just how she writes situations like that. I mean, she kind of skips through it really quickly. She's like, things are getting weird. He shot himself. this is why he shot himself. And then she moves on to, like, conversations with her friends. You'd think she'd spend more time talking about why Greg Mahoney shot himself in the ass, but it's fine. Just part of life. Part of going to keggers when you're a teenager.
Yeah, it just happened. Like,
yeah. I mean, that's kind of how teenagers are, though. Like, you're so wrapped up in your stuff that, like, yeah, that dude shot himself, but listen, this is what's happening with me right now.
But
yeah,
actually, like, it's more important.
That's the thing. Like, it happened, yes, but this also led to Marcus talking to her, which is the more important part from her point of view, which is really a really teenage thing
to
do.
I'm impressed that you remember that.
I opened it to the page.
Oh, you opened it to the page. Okay, I was like,
I'm not
damn.
That good. I'm not that good. I wish I was
that good.
I can
barely remember the characters' names.
I mean, yeah. I can do that with Harry Potter, but that's about it.
That's fair.
I too can do it with Harry Potter. The second favorite part was actually Marcus' part, was the part where she gives him her pee.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Okay, can we please? Okay, so Marcus essentially, he's like, he's going to fail a drug test. And he's like, I'm going to be out of this school. Like, I need you to do it. And she's just like, no, are you fucking
They're
kidding
like
me?
Both
no.
They're in the nurse's office yeah. or something.
Yeah. Because she's just sick of shit. And she's like, I need to get away from these people for a while.
She was sick of people telling. Oh, yeah. Sorry. That was.
She's just sick of everyone. So she's like, I just need some me time and some self-care. And then Marcus comes in and he's just like, you need to help me pass this drug test by peeing in this cup of yogurt I have, this empty yogurt cup I have.
I was like, they're not going to see the little, like, yogurt flecks floating around in your pee and wonder what's going on there.
Or the fact that, like, female urine is different than male urine.
Well,
thought of that before she did it. She's like, wouldn't they know the difference? I'm glad it at least occurred to her.
Yeah.
But then she did pee in the yogurt cup.
Yeah, because he said, I knew you wouldn't do it. And she was just like, ah!
He reverse psychology'd her.
Yeah, very well.
She flipped out and was like, you know what? And just peed right in that yogurt cup like a fucking champion.
Like a pro.
And then people were like, the people, you know, who know how to science, were like, okay, this is Lady Pee. So no. And then she becomes like this kind of great, like, legend, like the girl who gave Marcus Flutie her pee. And like, no one knows who it is. They just, the whole school finds out.
Some other girl's like, I did it. And they're like, no, you didn't.
This desperate freshman who's just like wants to be known, which I can't imagine. Because as a freshman, I just remember wanting so badly for no one to ever be thinking about me.
I was so desperate to be known for giving someone your pee to pass a drug test.
She got suspended for the rest of the year, which doesn't seem worth it to me.
No,
it was only like 2 weeks.
And also, who's it? The main character Jess was like, they're just gonna have forgotten by last year all this infamy that you like won over.
And they do in the book. Which I love. It never comes up again in this book. And then like she's a bigger character in the second book, but it's still like.
But it was just this beautiful bonding moment between her and Marcus. And I don't know, Marcus kind of like makes her step into or like pushes her past the edge. Mm-hmm. She gets really close to being frustrated in the book a lot about different things. And this was one of the times where she was just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to pee in this cup because people keep telling me what I can't do. And that actually
reminds me. She John Locked it. Don't tell me what I can't do.
Yes, that's right.
I will go on this walkabout. I will go around Australia and end up on an island somewhere. I really liked Lost, by the way, you guys.
She can do whatever she wants. She's a strong, independent woman who pees into cups because she can.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. It's interesting, actually. I'm kind of thinking about the, like, not people not being who they are. And there's another really good moment in this book where, like, she also realizes that, like, her parents are people that, like, go through things later in the book. Like, for most of the book, they're kind of, like, Her mom doesn't get her, and her dad, like, pushes her to be, like, super into running and, like, the best runner.
Her dad's,
runner.
Like, a really aggressive athletics lover to the point where, like, all her races that she wins, he's just like, here's how you could have done better.
Why did you lose by 10, like, 0.1 seconds?
Yeah. Yeah, they make him seem, like, borderline crazy.
Yeah, a little crazy. But her sister's basically terrible and, like, forces this moment where, like, her mom is super upset about her sister, like, abandoning their family for, like, whatever holiday.
Wait until the second book when the crazy sister gets pregnant.
Oh, God.
Yes.
God. Her sister, like, legitimately sounds terrible, like, even without the, like, sibling complications that can happen.
I feel like siblings getting married is kind of a, I don't know if it's a trope, but it's definitely something that's really common in teen books, a source of angst.
Well, that's all. She's also obsessed with John Hughes and, like, all those movies, so it kind of makes sense that this is in here. But also, like, at the same time, her sister is really similar to her. She's just extremely self-obsessed, just like Jess.
Yeah, that's true.
Just with different things.
Yeah, so that it was like an interesting moment where they, like, included the parents in the, like, you can make assumptions about people thing that I appreciated, where her mom, like, was like, no, your dad, like, cares about sports so much because he doesn't know how else to talk to you. And I was like, that makes sense.
Very true. Yeah.
I imagine living with a teenager is probably pretty stressful for parents too.
And like you can tell, like he's an IT guy, and I think you can tell that like he just doesn't know how to do anything outside of IT. Because like very briefly at the beginning of the book, she mentions that like he set up this really intense state-of-the-art webcam. Oh my god, datedness. But like that, and it doesn't work because like her friend's computer isn't as powerful as hers, but like her dad went through all this time and energy just
to do it for her.
And it's like, aw.
Yeah. There are like definitely signs that her parents care, but you get like a lot of, I mean, again, this is like the book is really good at capturing what it's like to be a teenager, where you like take your parents for granted until you have like one of those moments where you're like, oh, mom's really upset because my sister like totally blew her off again. So I really appreciated that. I feel like it would have been helpful to read as a teenager, like if I had found this book when I was younger.
Yeah. And there's some once again, I consider the first and second books kind of together. But like there's some great moments. Like this one has great mom moments. But in the second one, there's some great dad moments where she gets to bond with her dad.
Okay,
and you find out that the song he equates with her is that she's a maniac song, because that's what was playing when he was like going, like when she was being born and all this stuff. And also he calls her not so because she's not so darling. And I'm just like, oh my God, you guys, so cute.
Yeah, the dad was definitely a little bit more background in this book. The mom had more like bonding moments with Jess, which is fine. But yeah, I thought that was well done.
Yeah. I never got to the part where you like got to sympathize with them. I mostly just thought they were terrible. Because the dad, they make him sound so like aggressive and mean in everything she does. And there's even a part in the beginning, though this is definitely entirely in her headspace. I don't think this had tons to do with the dad. But where she was running and he was like biking behind her, and she like tried really hard to get him to run her over with his bike. She was like trying so hard to trip so he'd run her over and like ruin her running career so she wouldn't have to deal with it anymore. And there is a point where she like fucks up her ankle at like 3:30 in the morning running because she can't sleep. And does actually ruin her running career. And I think that she's upset about it, or at least ruins it in that moment.
She's upset that she doesn't get to run for, like, pleasure.
But she's glad that she doesn't have to do it in front of her dad anymore, I think. Because her dad's nuts about it. Like, he cut together video of her races and was like, that's where you lost, right there. Let her get in front of you.
And, like, that's the thing you have to, like, I guess there's many points I'm going to say to this, because I'm kind of being the devil's advocate here, because I agree with you. But also, like, he was the basketball champion of his school. They were expecting to have a son, but then the son, they did have a son, but he died from sudden infant death. So, like, think about it. You have 9 months and then a few more times to think about, like, all this boy sports bonding you're going to have. And he finally does get an athlete in the family, and she's good. She's not just, like, she describes it as the person who's struggling to get through the 5K. That would have been me. But, like, it's someone who's good and could actually, like, have a scholarship and all this stuff. And she understands that. But I also had a second point that I don't remember. So, yeah.
I remember that Michael was also a kind of a character, not unlike Hope, where he's kind of like a character that doesn't exist in the actual story, but seems to be a motivator for a lot of family angst and is like a serious, like the parents won't talk about it.
I mean,
But speaking about not talking about it, I just remember my second point. It's that, like, we have all this internal stuff from her, but she does not tell her parents what she's actually thinking until way later in the book. Way later. And then when her mom actually says, I didn't know any of this. And it's kind of that whole thing where, like, Jess thinks that everyone should just be able to read her mind, that it should be obvious. But, like, they don't know that this is how she sees their interactions with her. And I think that's kind of a good turning point for them.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing I wanted to mention that I did like about this book a lot was that, like, one of the, like, low-key sources of drama in the book is Jess's period, because she, like, works out so much that she, like, stops getting it. So she's, like, it's one of the things she's stressed about and, like, has to go the doctor route. But I, like, appreciated that this book talked about periods, talked about them realistically, and, like, broached the subject at all. No thoughts.
No thoughts. Yeah.
Sorry, no. Nicole was just like staring into space.
I'm sorry. That was like the 1 second where I zoned out because I was thinking about something. Sorry.
Anyway. Well, this is going to, I guess, now take us to Kathy's Smut Corner.
Ah, Kathy's Smut Corner.
Which is the greatest corner.
I'm glad that we transitioned from periods to the Smut Corner.
I mean, it's all interrelated when you really think about
That's true.
But I mean, like, I'm first going to say.
Did we talk about periods? Did I genuinely miss a period?
You did. What?
You totally missed it.
I told you. I zoned out just like a time. Okay. Wait. Go back.
Pause the smut corner. We're going back to periods.
Okay. I don't want to miss an opportunity to talk about periods. Although
that's
of course,
why I like looked over at you like, okay,
I was like,
so
why are you looking at me? I don't know. But it was like the 5 seconds that I wasn't paying. Please tell me all about periods.
Well, I was just talking about how I appreciated that like her period was like talked about in the book and was like kind of a like an ongoing thing that she was worried about.
Yeah, for like 5 months she didn't have a period. That I'd be worried too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like I skipped my period once when I was 16 and like irrationally thought that I had conceived despite like still being a virgin.
Those were her two theories. She was like either it's like immaculate conception or she like got spontaneously impregnated by Paul Parlapiano while she was like fantasizing about him on the toilet.
But I just like appreciated that like they talked about it at all. And like I'm sure it's like really common for it's probably not uncommon for people who like miss their periods to be like, I'm pregnant.
Yes.
Like despite all evidence to the contrary.
It's the first thing. Well, especially since there was like nothing else wrong with her. She was just really stressed and wasn't aware that that could totally do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was like an absence of period when they're talking about the period, which is like definitely a thing that people struggle with, but like or have to deal with. But I was like. Yes, for
and
talking about periods.
The fact that it comes back at the very end of the book is just so like, perfect.
The period comes back at the end of the book in what
another
way?
Reoccurring
like a period boomerang.
She decides, I'm just going to quick spoiler, she decides that she's going to have sex with Marcus Flutie on New Year's Eve.
Awesome.
And that's when he comes out. Oh, I don't want to spoil this for you because it's so good when you read it. He comes out and he's like, he tells her like, when I hung out with Heath, like, we overheard your conversations. You seemed like a really cool person. So I was like, how can I fuck with her and, like, you know, make her get out of her shell? And, like, after she agreed to do the drug test thing, he was going to, like, try and see if he could have sex with her. But then he, like, you know, got caught, all this stuff, became a better person.
And she lost the note. So.
Yeah, and she lost the note. He wrote a note to her that
I forgot about the note. What was in the note?
That oh, my God.
Bonkers. I never. So
there is. The most smuttiest, wonderful poem.
I just want to explain. I'm sorry. I just want to explain just really quickly that there was a part in the book where he slips a note into her back pocket and then she does what I would have done, which is fucking lose it immediately that day. Mm-hmm. And then she's stressed the entire time. Like, what did the note say? I want to know what the note said.
After she bonds with Bridget, Bridget's like, oh my God, I found this note in the girls' locker room. Is this it? And she's like, ah. And Bridget kept a hold of it because she's like, this is the most romantic and sexiest thing I've ever read.
Mm-hmm. And really? From Marcus Flutie?
It's okay.
The guy who wears Backstreet Boy t-shirts all the time?
Ironically.
Okay,
and she,
whatever.
And she, oh my, okay, so we're going to get there in a second.
Sorry, would you like to go back to Kathy's Smut Corner?
We can read it in the Smut Corner.
Okay,
like, that's
Smut Corner.
Totally legit.
But yeah, so he wrote this poem and it was just like great, but then he also kind of, he's just like, I realized like I was playing you before, but now we're friends. And I like, he says like, you're the one who's changed me, which is the best, but she's, since this is Jessica and she's just thinking so intensely, she's like, this is all still part of the game. He doesn't like this is all still a game. This is just for him to get into my pants. Like, he doesn't, this is just like Cal.
She spends so much time playing mind games just with herself.
Yeah. Exactly. That's true. Don't we all?
Yeah.
Like, at that point?
Definitely.
So, so she just goes, fuck you. And like runs away.
Wait. I'm imagining it as literally she screams fuck you and sprints across a field or something.
That's essentially what happened.
That's amazing.
That happened. Yeah.
What?
And then the book ends?
Page where Hope shows up from the airport and she's just like, I'm about to tell you everything. Because that's the thing is she wasn't telling Hope because Hope's brother died from drug use and Marcus, she associates with drugs. So like she's like, she tells Hope everything, but that's all off camera as well. But that brings us to Kathy's Smut Corner. Oh, my God. Okay. So,
so excited.
So there isn't actually that much smut. There's, like, the poem, which is fantastic. And I'm not going to actually go into the poem. But
I thought this was going to be a very smutty book. I don't know why.
Because I suggested it.
Because Kathy suggested it. Because it's called Sloppy Firsts. And I kind of just assumed it was going to be all about first-time sex. And it, like, kind of was. But it is because it was
about
a build-up
other
to
people's.
It.
It's about her virginity.
Definitely to other people's. Yeah, it's definitely
a
build-up to it.
It's definitely about her virginity.
But yes.
Our lovely virgin main character. Ugh, I just love her. Anyway, but so yeah, I'm going to actually say.
Jess Darlin'.
Aren't you darling? So I guess Kathy's Smut Corner this time. I'm going to talk not about anything particularly smutty in the book, but rather how this book has ruined the smut expectations for everyone. For like everything. Because the friend I was talking to earlier, she said to me like, that book really fucked me up for a long time.
Whoa.
Because. The like, no guys are actually Marcus Flutie. And he, once you read the poem, once you read everything, once you read the later books, he just, like, is this creepy Mary Sue of so many, like, the bad boy turned good that everyone,
just everything they described about him always sounded so ridiculous to me.
I know.
Including his upper arm Chinese character tattoo. It wraps around his arm Chinese character, which I swear to God, I bet it says you're a fucking idiot in Chinese.
Yeah. Probably, yeah. But, like, that's the whole thing is, like, he, like, has this, like, this crazy past. He does all this stuff, and he's just, like, a really smart guy who actually sees the truth, at least, of what, like, Jess thinks she's seeing and stuff like that. Like, he's was the impetus for the cheerleader fight because he was just like, she's not friends with any of you guys. She can barely tolerate you. And, like, all this stuff. Yeah, isn't
he's doing a lot of, like, inserting himself. And there was a part I remember being amazed at because she must have, like, amazing powers of, like, observation. But you did say she's, like, an over-observant 16-year-old where, like, she was talking to her friend Sarah and Marcus said something and she was like, he was sitting too far away to have been, like, to have just overheard the conversation. He must have been listening and he wanted me to know he was listening and that must mean this. And I just went, where did you get all of this, like, made-up information? And honestly, she could have totally been right, but I never would have picked up on that. So I can't tell if Marcus is giving her these vibes throughout the book or if she's just making stuff.
Nah, my friend Sylvie and I are exactly like that. It's funny because people think I'm, like, just completely oblivious to things, but I key in on the strangest things, and I'll just be like, blah, 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 and people will be like, what the fuck? Where the hell did that come from? But, yeah, so, like, I'm just going to say, like, a bunch of people were in love with, like, Edward Cullen and stuff in high school. I was in love with Marcus Flutie. I wanted to find the Marcus Flutie. I still haven't found a Marcus Flutie because he's a fictional character. Doesn't exist. He can't exist. But he's just, like, so beautiful and brilliant and this wonderful amalgamation of all these things. But, like, even...
I just love how much you love him.
I love him.
Audrey is giving me, like, the terrified
stare. Yeah, she's like, she did this slow turn towards Nicole that was like, we need to get out of this small room with Kathy. But, like, if Marcus Flutie walked through that door right now, I'd, like, flip the table and be like, see ya, and just be out of it. Like, oh.
If a skinny 16-year-old, no, I'm sorry. Okay, no, he was 17. With
he's older later in the books, okay?
With dreadlocks and a Backstreet Boys t-shirt.
He doesn't have dreadlocks later in the
books. Does he cut him off? Good.
Thank God.
I just thought that he was a black guy, and that's why there was, like, such a, like, she was like, I couldn't date Marcus Flutie. I thought there was, like, racial divide and tension and stuff. And then there's a part where she's, like, describing how she's seeing Marcus Flutie everywhere.
Because
he's
ginger.
I thought he was a black guy once, and I was like, oh, he's not. Okay.
Nope. Cool.
Yeah. Great. Cool. But, yeah, no, he's just, like, just, I guess, because I met him at, like, this point of, like, my teenage years where it's just, like, I became his Pepe Le Pew. I became all of these things as it was. But it's just, I, like, even in college, I tried to date the Marcus Flutie. Like, I there was a guy, he was similar-ish. He was, like, you know.
Smoked a lot of weed.
You know, played guitar on amphetamines until his fingers bled. That kind of thing.
Oh, cute. Stable. Yeah. Got the makings for a stable relationship.
Oh,
there.
That he was in love with his ex. It was great.
Can only end well.
Yeah, can only end well. But, you know, we all have to go through these things. But because, like, he was not a real Marcus. And I don't know. It's just my smut expectations were too high.
Smut expectations.
My smut expectations. But
I
it's
think
just,
reading romance novels as a kid is what fucked up my smut expectations.
Oh, my God. Okay, side note. I read my first real romance novel ever. Actually, from Audrey's husband, who had purchased it.
Really?
Yep, no problem.
That was the first one I ever read. It was the funniest goddamn book I've ever
read.
Do
you remember anything? Do you remember the title or the name? Or, like,
Gareth,
title or the author?
It's at
Gareth,
my house. You can borrow it.
Really? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm so excited.
Gareth, Lord of the Rakes. It's fucking a lady. A lady inherits a brothel.
We're not joking. Austin purchased this, not me.
I just love the enigma that is Austin. I want to know more about him.
It used the term callow swains 8 times throughout
what
the course.
Hell does it mean?
I think it means a flirty young gentleman.
Oh,
no, I used context
clues.
Callow,
like, cowardly?
I don't even just context clues means flirty young because he's like, I imagine, like, you're not ugly. You probably got many callow swains coming towards you.
That's
over
right.
Here. And I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yes,
like, it was literally the funniest thing I've ever read. I can't even. She's okay. Nicole, since you don't have any of the background here, the main character in this romance novel is an aged spinster virgin.
How aged is
question. That's what I'm questioning. How old do you think she is?
You say aged, it makes me think, like, 60.
Aged spinster virgin. How old
aged
do you think she is?
Aged spinster virgin. Yeah. I mean, if she's only a spinster because she's a virgin, like, 40?
25.
25! That was some horseshit.
I know. I was just like,
wait a minute.
There were like other people would talk about her like her life was over. Like she has no reason for living.
She's 25 now. Time to die.
Her ovaries are withering in her body.
Don't worry.
Drying to dust.
Don't worry. She got the Lord of the Rakes. Oh,
oh my God.
So wait. She's 25 and she inherits a brothel. This aging spinster.
Yes.
Through a hilarious comedy of errors. Yeah. Like when people get left babies in funny movies.
Yep.
Basically.
She has a secret half-brother.
This book sounds amazing.
Which isn't that secret. If you flip to the back and try and find out how many pages there are, you come across a family tree. So, you know, that spoiled that for me.
I feel like from what I read, this book had pretty good, like, smut expectations. I feel like if I'd read this instead of romance novels, I would have had a much better, like, understanding of just how, like, lame teenage sex probably can be.
Well, yeah.
Yes, but at the same time, like, I guess it's more the romance part. Like, you want this wonderful build-up thing.
It's all just so awkward, and that makes me feel better about it in general. Because I was like, I think I always thought that I was just doing it wrong. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm just, like, a super weirdo, and I'm not, like, smoothly picking up all the lines and, like, the conversations that you have with boys. But it's just shitty awkwardness, apparently, and I just didn't want to do it.
That's how it always is. I once had a panic attack on a date, so you know.
Awesome.
Oh, good.
I was 23.
Oh, I'm not going to say who because she would definitely kill me, but I do have a friend who told me a story where she accidentally took her antidepressants and had a glass of like wine before she left to calm her nerves, and she shit herself on the way to her date. She had to turn back around go home. I mean, she definitely was laughing her ass off when she told me, but I don't think she'd want me to say who. But
That's fair.
I had an anonymous hypothetical friend.
Totally not
so
you.
So I don't think a panic attack. Yeah, definitely not me. It was not me at all. I made it definitely sound like it was me now. But yeah, it wasn't a panic attack, but it's okay. Yeah. We all have our moments. Yeah, we all have our shit, man.
He showed up and he just like, it was via Tinder, and he just like spoke and his voice was like the sexiest thing I'd ever heard. And I was just like, I have to use the bathroom, and went into the bathroom. Almost like I was like about to throw up, broke the paper towel dispenser somehow. And then that is what snapped me out of it. Cause I like went through I panicked so much. I looped back around to this eerie calm and I was like, I need to fix this paper towel dispenser. And I did that and I like went back.
Did you just have like a panic thrash in the bathroom and you like, punched the dispenser?
No, I was trying to like get paper towel out and somehow like it started coming out of the top. I don't even know. It was so crazy. So then like I came back out and I was like sweaty.
I imagine you sweaty with like toilet paper kind of stuck in your hair and you're trying to look real cash.
The most amazing part is that I got a second date.
But really, that guy wanted to have sex with you a lot.
Yep.
He was willing to go through the second date.
I mean, don't we all hairs flip?
I thought it just made a really good job of like explaining how awkward everything is. A lot of the conversations were awkward. A lot of her thought processes, sometimes before she even said anything to him, I was just like, you've already screwed yourself over. Because you're just overthinking it so much.
Yep.
Or like she comes up with these like hypothetical things to say, and then what you find out that she actually said is, yeah.
She was like,
highly accurate.
Here's this perfectly articulate like thought process, and then just like, ellipses, ellipses. And you're just like, but you just thought it. But that's exactly it in high school. I was like, man, if I could have some do-overs in high school, I'd say much better things. But I'm sure at the time I was just going,
yeah, that's
or just not talking to them at all. I was definitely more of the like,
your mouth's open, but you don't realize nothing's coming out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or just like, all that's happening in your brain is like, I must escape.
Yeah. Or like, you just like kind of ignore. Like, I found out way after the fact that I had one of the brief times I wasn't in love with this gay guy, I had a crush on this other guy, and I found out way, like, years later that he had a crush on me at the same time. And it's just like, my life would have been different.
Yeah.
But, like, I like where I'm at now.
Yeah.
He, considering he's married, probably likes where he's at now.
That'd be cool.
It's like, you know, it's all good. But I was just like, it's really funny to think about, like, what could have been?
If only we were articulate.
Yeah.
If only we said things out loud and in English.
Yeah. If only instead of stealing his hat, I stole his heart.
Is that what you did?
Oh, yeah. I was that horrible white girl. Like, that was me.
You stole his hat.
Yeah.
That was that the hint? Was that like the signal? He was taking his hat and then
he stole my locker magnet. So, you know, it was.
So you guys were basically married.
We were basically married. Okay. But yeah. So I guess. Thank you guys for listening, especially this wonderful tangent we went off on the end here.
That's fun. Crushes, life,
smut.
It's all important.
It's great. It's beautiful.
Serious.
Oh, Expectations.
Kathy's looking at me expectantly.
Yes, panicking on Audrey is in charge of the next book, and I'm wondering with bated breath if she has actually chosen the next book or not.
Fun fact, I haven't. I'm going to pick it right now. We're doing this live.
Okay.
Here we go. Drum roll, please.
Just like Good Times.
Is there a book named Good Times?
Probably, okay. But not one that I want to read.
Okay. Good to know.
Let's read. We're going to depart from teen books, I think, for this one. And we're going to read The Invisible Library. Calling it.
All right.
Also, I have a copy of that book if anyone needs to borrow it. By?
Yes, I would like to borrow that.
It's by an author whose last name is Cogman and her first name is Genevieve. Perfect. Don't know why I remembered that backwards.
That's fine. You did a very good job.
Let's see. Invisible Library. Yes, Genevieve Cogman.
All I remember is it's got a blue cover and there's a key on it. And it's got a little bit of gold because I had to crop it.
Once. Yep. Also, the nice thing about the series, too, there's three now. But it's newer. The first one came out in 2014, but this lady can write. The second and third one are both published in 2016.
Holy crap. So she's like,
weird. I know. I was like, how did you? Yeah, pretty
she should
much.
Get together with that guy. You know, and they would
you know
put out a book every 2 years.
Also the opposite of George R. R. Martin is Stephen King, who published two of the Dark Tower books in 1 year, and they're both like 1,000 pages long.
Are they good?
Well, yes.
That's the thing, because if not, then you're just James Patterson / Norman.
No,
well, usually when
it's
just
it's
pumping
good.
Out books.
Usually when that happens, though, like the author shows up really sweaty with like a huge stack of paper, and he's like, I finished my book. And they're like, okay, we're going to make this two. I hope
yeah,
that's
it's,
okay.
It's really apparent that's exactly what happened with Stephen King, where he was just like, I'm done now.
And he's got like he's got like 6 months worth of beard growth. Yep. And he's so thin.
Yep, exactly. You're trying to like eyeball at me.
No. I was hoping you could get closer to your microphone, but you are now. So
nope,
it's all
here
good.
I am, right here. Everyone can hear me great.
Yep, it's all good.
Just think as your microphone. Think of your microphone as Marcus Flutie. Just get right,
right
in there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Get right on in there.
Yep.
Think of it as someone you'd be willing to give your pee to.
I guess
That's how I'll measure love from now on. Would I pee into a yogurt cup for this person?
Well, I hope the answer is no, because science still exists. And like,
but in a desperate moment, if they ran into the room and you were half asleep and they woke you up and said, they put their hand on your knee and they said, I need your pee. Would you do it?
Oh, that's exactly how Austin would ask, too.
It is.
I'm imagining, like, the only thing you have to substitute is, like, a ring, and that's just how he asked you to marry him.
That's pretty much what happened. I won't lie. I was literally sick in bed with my period, like, feeling like death, and he was like, will you marry me? And I was like, Austin, I have to repeat this story for the rest of my life. And this is how you asked me.
Yeah, he couldn't catch you after, like, your most mortifying possible moment, so you could always remember it as part of that. So he was like, let me just pick a time when she's just deathly ill.
At least she hadn't just shit herself in the car.
That's true. At least she wasn't on her way there.
His thought process was that it would, like, make me feel better.
He definitely played that. That's, like, a strong card to play for an illness. Did you have, like, pneumonia?
No, I was on my period, so it's just like, I'm just having cramps.
Is he going to propose every month?
Every month, no.
Just like out of panic. Oh God, well, marry me.
No.
Okay.
Well, anyways,
thank you for listening, everyone.
Thanks
for listening.
We'll see you guys next time at the Invisible Library. Wink.
Wink, wink.
Bye, everyone.